For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
And good morning. It is a half a minute before 11 a.m. on KBOO, KBOO Portland, coming up at 11, Between the Covers. With today is Oregon writer Amber J. Kaiser. She talks about her new novel, The Way Back from Broken. At 11:30 on the film show, the guests are artist and filmmaker Mark Andres, documentarian Gina Labrique, and Dan Halstead of the Hollywood Theater. Thank you, KBOO members, for supporting KBOO Community Radio. If you are not a current member, it's a wonderful time of year to become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
Oh, my Christmas, please.
You're all I want for Christmas.
Longtime KBOO community member Deborah Lieber read The Night Before Christmas for you, and it is available at kboo.fm/nightbeforechristmas2015. Happy holidays.
I've heard so much talk about you, Santa, but are you for real?
Are you for real?
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers. My guest is writer Amber Kaiser. She grew up in Oregon, lives now in Bend, and she is a former ballerina and evolutionary biologist. She writes both fiction and nonfiction for tweens and teens and others. Her new novel is The Way Back from Broken, and it's the story of loss and survival. Her other books include the nonfiction title Sneaker Century, A History of Athletic Shoes, a picture book, An Algonquin Heart Song, Paddle My Own Canoe, two graphic novels about science, as well as a photo-illustrated nonfiction title Anatomy of a Pandemic. Welcome to Between the Covers, Amber Kaiser.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, as we just heard, you have quite a varied background in what you have written. Can you talk a little about how you've come to write such different kinds of books?
You know, I'm curious about everything. And one of the best things about being a writer is that I can follow that curiosity wherever it leads me. But as you mentioned, I started out as a scientist. And so my entree into writing for children was really writing about scientific topics. And on the side, I was writing fiction while I was writing articles and books about science for kids. And so this novel that has just come out in October was a 5-year process, all the while I was working on my nonfiction.
Do you categorize this book as a young adult novel?
It is categorized as a young adult novel. What I'm finding from readers is that there's a lot of crossover, and many adults are reading it and finding that it resonates with their own experiences of loss and healing.
I know when I was reading it, I didn't necessarily think that it had to be aimed at a younger audience. I thought that it could be read meaningfully by people of various ages.
I hope so.
talking about that whole concept for a minute, what kinds of things do people who write young adult fiction, what kinds of things do you think about, or what kinds of things are you encouraged to think about by the people that work in that field?
Well, there are certainly publishing standards for how books are categorized that have to do with the age of characters in the story, some of the themes, the level of language, both from a reading level perspective, but also from a, you know, whether it's swearing or, you know, the edginess of topics. For me, though, I love to write for younger readers because, and I love to write about that experience of coming into our own. How do we figure out who we're going to be in the world? How do we separate from our family? How do we find a unique way to express ourselves? And that period in life is so enticing to me because there's so much potential. All of the doors can be open when you're a young person. And the question is, which of the doors are you going to walk through? So for me, I'm really thinking about that idea of who we are and how are we moving through the world when I'm thinking about writing for younger readers.
Mm-hmm. When you are working on a book that's for that audience, do you have to pitch it to specific people, or how does that work? It's in the publishing world. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I have a brilliant literary agent who is my colleague and mentor in all things. So she's both helping me figure out what are the projects that are best for me to work on, as well as finding a home for those stories within the publishing world. And she specifically works on children's literature. So everything from picture books to upper YA and crossover novels.
Let's talk about this novel, The Way Back from Broken. This story is about people dealing with grief, as I mentioned. It's told from the point of view of, is his name pronounced Rockman?
It is.
Okay. Rockman Cannon. He's a 15-year-old boy whose baby sister has died in his arms. Can you talk about what inspired you to write this story?
So The Way Back from Broken is fiction, but it has a lot of truth woven into its pages. And the core of this book is really my own personal loss. So my first child, my daughter, was stillborn 15 years ago. And my life was utterly changed in every aspect after her loss. And I knew at some point that I would probably write about what had happened. But I also knew that I wouldn't write another grieving mother memoir. There are some wonderful ones out there, and I probably read them all. Mm-hmm. And I that wasn't what I wanted to write. What I really wanted to write about 15 years after my own tragedy was loss and grief and that path and what are the pitfalls along the way. And I wanted to write a book that captured everything that I know about grief. And I also wanted to put that in a very real context, which for me is about the healing power of wilderness.
Before we get to the wilderness part of The Way Back from Broken, I wanted to talk about a central focus at the beginning of the novel, which is Promise House, mm-hmm. a place where Rockman and his mother go for therapy, different kinds. Each group, children and adults, have a different part of the house to go to. But if you would, explain how you created this setting for the beginning of the novel.
So I've spent a lot of time in places like Promise House, there's a national organization called Compassionate Friends that is designed to support parents who've lost children at any age. And then there is a organization here in Portland called Brief Encounters that is really focused on pregnancy and infant loss. And I've been to support groups offered by both of those organizations. And what I found is that you really connect with people who can share your experience, and that the other parents I met in those groups were the most influential people in my healing process because they also knew what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And these groups also provide a way for those of us who are a little bit farther along in our grieving to offer support for those for whom the loss is fresher.
And in the book, the support group for the children who were affected by these losses is the primary part.
Right.
Even though we do recognize that their parents are also dealing with great grief, but the story is focused on the children. But
it is.
So again, just as you mentioned, that in your experience, the help or the support of these other people who had gone through something similar was so important for Rockman, the experiences of these other people in the group were interesting, the different kind of versions of how they were dealing with losses in their life. Maybe you could say something about the different people who are in his group.
Right. So Rockman is a biracial boy. His mother's Mexican-American, his father's African-American. And this group, one of the things that's unique about the Promise House in the book and about loss in real life is that it creates a commonality across a whole bunch of factors, across race, across class, across religion. And that definitely happens in this group of kids that are in Promise House. So there's Molly, who's from an upscale, a white girl from an upscale neighborhood. There are the twins, African-American boys from Rockman's neighborhood, who...
Taggers.
Who are taggers, yeah. And then JC, of course, who is the 10-year-old girl who is part of this, an integral part of this story. And she becomes really fixated on Rockman at this group because she sees in him something he can't even see in himself, which is a strength and the ability to be a big brother, which is what she desperately needs, and which is the role he thinks he's failed at.
And he is very alienated, very, I don't know, how would you describe him as far as his mental state at this point?
You know, he's shut down, he's closed off. He believes that the best way to avoid more pain, which he has already had in spades, is to constantly remind himself that everything is awful, and it is most likely that everything will go to suck in the end. And so he has this little notebook where he writes down all of the horrible things so that he can remember. And I think that captures an experience that I have had with both physical and emotional pain, where you think, okay, right now it's bad, but I can handle it, but I don't want to forget because then I'll lose my ability to cope with it. So he's staying in this very closed off, incredibly painful place because hope is far too terrifying for him.
And what is his relationship like with his mother?
So part of what happens in this story is that we see the ways in which loss can fracture families, and also the ways in which they can be brought together again in unusual combinations. So while it's in the background, it's an important part of the story is the way Rockman's mother and JC's mother become really close. Rockman and his mother... I mean, there's so much love there between, and what I see in this, I love this family so much, and I see them struggling to love each other when each of them is in so much pain, and they're in pain in such different ways.
And there also is a kind of a theme in the book of the kind of separateness of, I think JC expresses it in that adults always lie, and that the children realize that, and they are stuck trying to interpret what's going on with the adults when the truth is not being spoken.
That's true. JC makes everyone in this book very uncomfortable because she says things the way they are. She doesn't say he passed away. She says my brother died. She says, here are my brother's ashes in this box. Do you want to look at them? She doesn't buy any of the platitudes about this was for a reason or your brother's an angel in heaven now. None of that makes sense to her. She's very concrete. And that directness that many young children have when they're talking about death makes everyone very uncomfortable.
I'm speaking with Amber Kaiser about her new book, The Way Back from Broken. This is Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. I wanted to ask about a little bit more about the language in the book, because you kind of mentioned this when we were talking before about when you're writing for young adults, how you approach different parts of the writing. And the language in this book is not, it's not all censored. You know, I mean, Rockman and his acquaintances or friends use language that we're not allowed to say on the radio. But how was that? Is that something that you have to worry about when you're writing for young adults?
When I'm writing for young adults, I don't think about censoring the language with respect to swearing at all, nor do I think very often about whether a word is too hard a word. Young adult readers are very sophisticated, and I think they deserve all of the complex language that we can give them. So I'm not specifically thinking about the age of my readers with respect to what I give them. But what I am trying to do is create a voice that is very true for each character. And it would be awfully hard to write teenage boys who don't use obscenities sometimes.
Right. It felt real to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought if you hadn't done that, it might not have felt so real.
I think that's true. Uh-huh. I think that's true. I mean, there are, you know, I want to use obscenities carefully. My family recently watched a movie that was full of the F word, and at some point it lost its power as a word. Yeah. Right? And so, like, if you think about the very end of Harry Potter and where Ron's mom swears that swear that she swears at Bellatrix, that's a really powerful moment because none of that language has been used before. So I am not trying to, I don't want to throw away any of my words, whether they're obscenities or not. I try to be really careful with them.
And the way that JC speaks has its own peculiarity to it. I mean, she's not a typical 10-year-old.
She's a little bit wacky, that one. I have an 11-year-old daughter, and she would probably like me to admit on the air that I have stolen many of JC's best lines from her, and I pay her in chocolate for that. But I do think that I love spending time with young people. I love writing for young people. I love going into classrooms. I love doing workshops at libraries. I love being with young people. And I love listening to them. They have really great insights to share with us if we take the time to listen. Mm-hmm. And so for me, writing JC was really a pleasure because she captures a lot of the wisdom of youth. And I wanted her to bring to this book a little sparkle and a little thoughtfulness and the ability to see some magic in the real world that the other characters, the older characters that are a little getting crusty, mm-hmm. aren't capable of seeing.
Right. And I loved her, the fact that she's an awkward, she's not particularly attractive or any of those kind of things. And I loved that.
I'm glad.
We mentioned earlier that you referred to the kind of healing through wilderness idea. And so a large part of this story takes place in the Canadian wilderness.
It does.
Talk a little bit about first how that happens that they do go to the Canadian wilderness, and then also why you chose that particular setting.
So the book starts out in Portland. These characters live in Portland. And as the families become closer together, JC's mom, Leah, is really struggling, and she feels more and more uncomfortable and confined in this regular life where there's not a baby, where there was supposed to be a baby because she had a stillborn son. And the only thing she can think to do is to go to a place where she had a lot of joy as a child, which was at her uncle's cabin in the Canadian wilderness. And she ends up taking JC and Rockman with her there. And the cabin is less spectacular than she remembers, shall we say. It's rather decrepit and full of mice and pretty disgusting. And again, she's running. She's in pain and she's running, and both emotionally and physically. And so she decides to take them on a canoe trip because that also is something that helped, that she loved as a teenager. And that's where it becomes a survival story from that point. Now, I set it in this particular place in Ontario, in northern Ontario, because that is the place of my heart. And that's certainly the place that I went to after my own daughter died. My grandmother was a canoe guide in Canada in the 30s and 40s. And she built a cabin in Ontario in 1938, and that cabin is still in our family. Mm-hmm. It is far more rustic than the cabin in the way back from Broken, but not nearly as gross. And it is still the place that my family returns to every year and that we use as a home base then to go on wilderness canoe trips. When I was first talking to the editor, Andrew Carr, who edited and acquired this book from me, he asked me in one of our first conversations how I came to write this book. And I told him that I wrote about the two things in which I'm an expert, which are grief and canoeing.
Wow. And is the area, the actual area that you spend time in, does it have the kind of hazardous parts of rapids and canoeing experience that Rockman encounters?
It does. I mean, this is a very true-to-life story of a canoe trip. If anybody has been in the Boundary Waters area, they will be familiar with this landscape that has many, many small lakes pretty close together, embedded in this forested landscape. And so to travel through it, you paddle across the lake, and then there's a trail that connects that lake to the next lake, and you put your backpack on your back and your canoe on your head, and you hike across the portage to the next one. And so traveling that way, you can go on these really long backcountry trips. And so my family does this every year. The year before last, we were out for 8 days, so we do go on these extended trips. And there, the region where we go, you know, there isn't cell phone service. It doesn't matter if you take your phone. So all of that is real, that it is a backcountry experience, where if you get into trouble, then you have to get yourself out of trouble again.
So the character, Leah, that you mentioned, who is actually Rockman's teacher,
who
adds a element of sort of
deep discomfort
discomfort and surreal nature to his own experience to be on this trip with his teacher, who is very distressed and does seem very driven to do these actions and really takes them into this dangerous experience unknowingly and sort of totally unaware of what potential could be for them all. And still staying with that idea of this experience and how it promotes healing, or how it comes to be an experience of healing for the people involved, it seems like there are different elements to that. Like one of the elements is just being out of the reality that they are used to. What are some of the other aspects of that wilderness experience that makes it so healing for the parties?
There are a couple of things. First, Leah says in the book that this is a place that takes me how I am. It doesn't matter if I'm happy. It doesn't matter if I'm sad. This is the lake. This is the rock. These are the trees. This is what you do. So I think there's that piece of being in the natural world where we are small and temporary and insignificant. And sometimes I think that feels terrible, but sometimes that also feels freeing. And because we're part of a broader experience of living and dying in the cycles of life, and sometimes you can find some peace there. I think the other piece is physical exertion, effort, and competence. One of the things that Rockman develops is he is competence. He knows that he can do this, and if you can test yourself against nature, test yourself, and again, that idea of being in a place where you're very isolated and a cell phone can't save you, then you have to be self-reliant. And that also, for someone who's really grieving, can be powerful. And then for JC, she's the one who's on the trail noticing things that are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she's picking up interesting rocks and putting them in Rockman's pocket, and she's finding feathers, and she's taking photographs of, you know, bark and mushrooms and moose poop and all of the things that she finds that she can be fascinated by. And it is important, if you are grieving, to find a way to give yourself a little bit of freedom from that pain, mm-hmm. even if it's just temporary.
maybe this would be a time where we could hear a short passage from the way back from Broken. You have a passage that we talked about in your reading.
Yeah, I'd be delighted. So this section is really past the middle of the book, but it's at the very beginning of this canoe trip that they're on. And, you know, keep in mind that Rockman is a city boy, and this is not his natural environment at all. And so this is when this poor, tender boy is thrown to the wolves. The rest of the day was a blur of lake and trail. As Rockman lifted the canoe on the last portage, a blister on the palm of one hand burst, and the fluid inside it splattered his face. He didn't have the strength to do anything but register how gross that was, add the spiking pain to his list, and hit the trail. He'd always associated that phrase, hit the trail, with cowboys, but after five portages, he now understood it to mean the dazed, aching, echoing state in which all you wanted to do was beat the ground with your fists in frustration. 100 times that day, he'd considered lying in the path and refusing to move, but something had kept him going, whether it was hating Leah or hating life or just following JC. He watched his footing. The last thing he needed was to fall again. From the wet, warm slick of blood, Rockman could tell the scrape on his knee had opened. With his luck, he'd probably break something if he fell again, and of course they had no phone. Mechanically, he set down the canoe, hefted Leah's pack, and loaded it into the bottom of the boat. JC had long since stopped slipping rocks into his cargo pockets. She sat on a rock at the edge of this new lake and stared blankly out into the growing dusk. Leah handed him the smaller packs. "We made it, guys," Rockman grunted. All he wanted to know was when he could lie down. Instead, he stood and waited for Leah and JC to get in the canoe. Sitting down would be the end of him. As he picked up the paddle and thrust the canoe into deeper water, his open blister burned against the wooden shaft, and every muscle in his arms and torso screamed in protest. Olarge was the perfect torture, he thought. When you can't walk anymore, you paddle. When your hands are about to fall off, you hike, and every single part of your body ends up hurting. But it had also, he realized, turned off his brain. It had been hours since he had thought of home, or Dora, or the gaping shotgun blast through his chest. The pain in his body trumped all of it. Its stupor was a small but not insignificant treasure, like the nuggets of quartz in the pocket of his pants. When Leah pointed to an open campsite, he added extra force to his J-stroke and nosed the canoe into shore. The sun had dropped below the horizon, and dark was coming fast now. The spot was mostly rocky, with a grassy oval in the middle. Some other camper had made a ring of stones for a fire, and a twisted grill leaned against it. Rockman hauled up the big pack, eyeing the line of dark trees behind the campsite. He didn't like the way the forest pressed against them. "Hey, JC," said Leah, emerging from the open top of the huge pack with a collapsible saw. "I saw a downed cedar along the shoreline. Let's go get some firewood. Rockman, can you find the tents?" He nodded and watched them disappear around a rocky point. When the sound of JC's voice faded, other sounds filled his ears, swishing, creaking, tapping. He had no idea what this place contained.
That was Amber Kaiser reading from her book, The Way Back from Broken. And you mentioned the name of the canoe, Olarge. Is that how it's pronounced?
So this canoe that Rockman and JC find in Uncle Leroy's woodshed has a plaque on it that says Olarge. And that phrase is something that has great significance in this book.
Yeah. Well, Amber, we're almost out of time. I assume you're still going to continue writing both fiction and nonfiction. What are you working on as we speak?
Well, my next book comes out in February. It is also for young adult readers. And this is an anthology that I have put together of women writing personal essays about their first sexual experiences.
Hello.
And it's called The V Word, and it comes out in February, just in time for Valentine's Day.
That should attract an audience, I'm sure.
It's going to be a fun book to put out.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this, and really appreciate that you were able to make it into KBOO and be on Between the Covers.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to let people know again, I have been speaking with Amber Kaiser. Her last name is spelled K-E-Y-S-E-R. And we've been talking about her new book, The Way Back from Broken, here on Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Thank you for listening.
Hey, fellow weirdo. This is Rich, host of Radio Lost and Found. Be sure to check out the show in its new time slot. That's every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour mediascape of found records, tapes, found sound, internet insanity, and more. That's Radio Lost and Found every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the NARA New Year's Eve Sobriety Powwow on Thursday, December 31st from 1 p.m. to midnight at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Grand entry will be at 1 and 6 p.m. with honorings, Ed Goodell as the whip man, NARA All Nations Drum as the host drum, and MC Philip Archambault. Again, that's the NARA New Year's Eve Sobriety Powwow, Thursday, December 31st, from 1 p.m. to midnight at the Oregon Convention Center, Hall A and B, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Happy holidays, and welcome to a special edition of The Film Show on KBOO. I'm S.W. Conser.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Today we'll be talking with Portland artist and filmmaker Mark Andres, whose newest animated silent film, The Somnambulists, will screen at the Northwest Film Center on January 6th of next year.
And we'll also be joined by documentarian Gina Liebrecht,